A forthcoming movie called Aliens of the Deep is set in a dark, desolate, inhospitable world populated by fantastic creatures. Death is just one small miscalculation away for its intrepid heroes. It sounds like it could be the latest production from James Cameron, and in fact it is, but unlike The Terminator, Titanic, or The Abyss, this picture did not come from his imagination. It's an IMAX documentary due out in January that explores the denizens of the ocean floor. James Cameron writes about it in the latest issue of Wired magazine, where as guest editor, he discusses new discoveries about Earth, space, and the idea of exploration itself. A little bit later in this program, scientist Robert Ballard will join us, the man who found the Titanic. He'll talk about returning to the wreck 20 years later. But first, James Cameron. If you have questions about exploration, the risks of traveling to the bottom of the ocean or to Mars, join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. James Cameron joins us now from our bureau in New York. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hey, Neil. How you doing?
Very well, thanks. In this introduction to the new issue of Wired magazine, you confess you had an ulterior motive when you proposed to make the movie Titanic.
I think I can talk about it now since everybody made so much money off the film. I can't really complain. But at the time, I was more interested in diving the wreck itself than I was in making the movie. I fell in love with the film as we made it. But initially, I was just fascinated by the possibility of doing real exploration of the wreck.
And you figured if the submarine you were in got crushed, well, no big deal. They hadn't really started spending any money yet.
That's right. They hadn't cast Leo yet and built the set, so they weren't going to be out that much.
What was it?
Go ahead.
That's all right. I just going to say, what was it about, I mean, of course, the wreck of the Titanic, a very romantic, dramatic piece of 20th century technology there at the bottom of the North Atlantic, but there had to be more than just that.
Well, the story was fascinating, certainly, and I fell in love with it more and more as I went along. Initially, I was interested in making a film that told that story as a piece of history, but through the lens of a new technology, which allowed us to reach it. The thing about Titanic, I think, that fascinates people, is this idea that it's gone to this netherworld that can only be reached almost by the technology equivalent to a space mission. So it's almost like you're going to a different world to visit something that's kind of in transition, almost like the Greek underworld concept. And so that gives it an epic quality that another historical story set in 1912 wouldn't have. And then, you know, coming in through that lens, you're immediately on a journey. You're on a voyage, and then in the movie it becomes a voyage back in time to that time and place, and you know it goes from there. So I probably placed too much emphasis on the deep dive portion of it initially, but that's what was right in front of us, and we wanted to do it well and get some great definitive images of the wreck. And so and plus I wanted to dive to the Everest of shipwrecks, which is really what it was.
And one dive was not enough for you. You've returned since often to the ocean floor.
Right. Well, we did 12 dives in 95, shooting with a film camera where we had loads of less than 10 minutes per dive. And we got a few good images that we put into the movie. In 2001, we went back out and did 12 more dives using now digital image capture technology, which allowed us to shoot, 8 hours of footage per dive. And so the rewards were much, much greater. And we also explored inside the wreck for real in our 2001 expedition using robotic technology that we'd built ourselves to kind of go room by room and do a proper archaeological survey of the inside of the wreck, which had not been technically possible before that.
Mm-hmm. And then you return now for this new IMAX movie, Aliens of the Deep.
Right. Now, we were returning to the ocean depths in a general sense, but for the new film, we were exploring hydrothermal vent sites, which were, biology, natural history sites along the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and the East Pacific Rise and the Sea of Cortez. And basically, you're sort of a mile, 2 miles down at these what are essentially underwater volcanoes. And the biological communities at these places are really quite fascinating.
Well, take some calls with James Cameron in just a minute. By the way, if you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address again is totn@npr.org. But I wanted to ask you about this provocative article you have in the issue of Wired magazine, and talking about exploration and the need for humans to explore, not just you and your fascination with the bottom of the ocean, but you feel that this is something the species needs.
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe that it's an integral part of our growth as a civilization, and that we need to continue to do it. We need to do it probably more aggressively than we're doing it right now. And that's based on a historical perspective as much as anything. I personally was sort of, coming to full consciousness as a person back in the 60s, and that was such an amazing sort of golden age of technical exploration in the deep oceans with, Jacques Cousteau and all the various man in the sea programs, and the Apollo space program and so on. So I grew up with it, but the historical perspective is that those cultures and those societies which did reach out, did explore, did go over the mountain or build ships and go across the ocean were the ones that prospered and prevailed, and the ones that stultified and turned inward did not. And we need to take a lesson from history. And we have to remember that Magellan, Vasco da Gama, Cook, those guys, when they left their shores, they didn't leave perfect utopian societies that had solved all their problems internally before they spent money to go outward. They left death and disease and a lot of social injustice and a lot of unsolved problems, but they went, and their governments supported them. And those societies benefited. Mm-hmm. So I think that
they weren't going for altruistic purposes either.
No,
they weren't going for
no.
the idea of exploration.
Absolutely not. Well, some of them were. I think there are certain people that are attracted to exploration, just on its face, just in and of itself, the intellectual curiosity, the challenge of it, if you will, the knowledge that what you're seeing has never been seen before, that you get to come back and tell the tale, or you get to, the scientific perspective is you get to bring back the data, you get to publish. I think those are motivators. I think it's fine for people to be motivated by essentially selfish reasons, self-enlightenment reasons, if you will. But I think it's okay, because I think that almost any exploration that's true exploration is for the long-term good of the society.
You argue that in terms of space exploration, that the last time humans crossed space to a destination was Apollo 17 in 1972, and in the 32 years since, we have treated space as a destination in and of itself rather than as the medium to be crossed.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. I mean, people are fascinated now that there's private sector access to space that's being offered. And I think that while that's fun and it's exciting and it's all in a good direction, it's important to remember that as a civilization or as a nation, we've been thinking of space as a destination instead of an obstacle. And really, we need to be thinking of it as the ocean that needs to be crossed. Columbus isn't famous for having gone down and plopped his ship in the water 2 miles offshore. He's famous for having crossed the ocean to a destination.
Mm-hmm.
And so our destinations are other, planetary bodies in the solar system, whether it's our moon or whether it's Mars or whether it's asteroids, comets, the moons of Jupiter and so on. We need to be expanding our capability. That capability, and in order to do that, we have to increase our technology and our organization, and that'll have a feedback effect back into our economy.
Well, we haven't sent humans to those places, but we've certainly sent robots to explore Mars and various other places. There's great pictures coming in now of the moons of Saturn.
Well, this has been an ongoing debate, especially in space and in ocean exploration for the last, call it 10, 15, 20 years. The scientists will say that the return for dollar is greater with robotics, and that's certainly true in the short run. But in the long run, if you're doing planetary surface exploration, a human field geologist can do more in a day or so than the Mars rovers have done in several months on the surface. So the idea is now it's fairly well accepted within the space community that the long-term goal is to have robots and humans working together. The robots are precursors. they go, they get you enough data that you know how to support a human expedition on the surface of Mars, let's say. And then when they go, they'll use robotics to extend their reach and to be more productive while they're there.
Our guest is James Cameron, obviously the famous director of the Titanic, the Terminator movies, Aliens, so many others. Also the guest editor for Wired Magazine's December issue, in which he discusses the idea of human exploration, not just of the ocean floor, but of space and, of course, of Earth itself. Our number, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Let's take a call from Joe. Joe's calling from Sequoit in New York.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
I was calling about robotic suits that I've heard that have been used for walking on the ocean floor, possibly used for mapping and exploration. I wondered if James had heard of these and or used them.
Sure. They're generally referred to as hard suits or exosuits, and it's a relatively new technology, at least the newer, more flexible ones. And I think it's a cool thing that needs to be explored. You put an individual inside a hard suit, and they don't have to decompress. They can go down, a couple of thousand feet, I think, is the depth rating on the newer ones.
That's impressive.
Yeah, they're cool. I haven't been in one yet. I'm looking forward to doing that. I know a guy named Phil Newton has been a real pioneer in that area, and he's building a new suit called an exosuit that that you can actually swim, that'll actually have fins.
Mm. That might be fun, but to continue the discussion earlier, what's the difference between sending a guy down in a hard suit and sending a camera down?
It depends on what you're trying to accomplish. I think that certainly a pair of human eyes in situ can be very valuable in terms of problem solving, although it definitely ups the ante in terms of the amount of support you need and the safety requirements that have to be done. But I think there's something about human exploration, whether it's in space or in the ocean. You know, the saying is, nobody ever said, I want to grow up to be a robot. They want to grow up to be an astronaut. And there's something about, the projection of our human consciousness to these distant realms that really needs the first-person narrative, needs somebody to come back and tell the tale. And that's putting it in the simplest terms, and maybe it's looking at it from a filmmaker's perspective, which is basically storytelling.
Yeah, needs poetry, yeah.
Yeah, when the Apollo astronauts stepped onto the moon, we all stepped onto the moon in some way. We shared with them that common humanity. And they, in a world where we're constantly confronted with the darkest, most venal, most corrupt, most violent aspects of our human condition, it's great to have heroes out there who are doing something besides just, slam dunking a basketball, that are doing something that ennobles us as a species.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Sorry, I got on my soapbox.
It's okay.
Thanks, Joe.
In a way, wanted to follow up. I mean, in this period in which you say, perhaps provocatively, we've been spending 32 years going nowhere fast, perhaps the greatest instrument of human exploration ever devised, the Hubble Space Telescope, has been providing us with all kinds of information.
Yeah, the Hubble Space Telescope is actually a really great success story, and it's a great success story not as a robotic vehicle, although it's certainly remotely operated, but it was enabled by the Human Space Transportation System, the space shuttle, which put it up there, and by subsequent shuttle missions, which have repaired it, fixed the optics that were done incorrectly, and so on. That thing would have been a complete bust if it hadn't been for human hands up there physically repairing it. Right now, NASA, to take pressure off the space shuttle, the number of space shuttle missions that they want to fly before they retire that system, they're looking at robotics to do future Hubble repairs. And it's a very daunting task to design a robot that has the kind of in situ smarts and capability that a human being does.
James Cameron is our guest. We're going to take a short break. If you'd like to join the conversation, by the way, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. If you were an explorer, where would you go? I'm Neil Conan, back after a break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with James Cameron, the Oscar-winning director of Titanic, as well as the Terminator series, and also a new documentary, Aliens of the Deep, about the sea, space, exploration, and the movies. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And James Cameron, I wanted to ask you, your father was an engineer. You studied physics when you were in college. How did you end up in movies? You seem to be back in science.
Well, I'm kind of a gearhead, I guess. You know, I love storytelling, and I love, you know, art and imaging as much as I love the sort of the technology side. So the best place to express all of those things is in filmmaking, because it's the most, arguably one of the most technical of the arts, and it's so dependent on and sensitive to you know, improvements in technology and so on. So I've always tried to be at the cutting edge in the films that I've made, and there was a point in college where I couldn't decide between the arts and the sciences, and so I guess I've always been kind of a frustrated scientist, or maybe to be charitable, a science groupie. And so I've gotten to walk down that other road a little ways in the last few years with these expedition projects. Of course, we fund them through film financing. You know, they're either TV shows or they're large format 3D films like our O-1 expedition and this most recent one that we're just releasing now.
So to the degree to which you can go exploring is limited. You've got to come back with something you can show in a theater.
That's right. That's right. We have to come back with the goods, and we have to come back with images that tell a good story. And we go to sea knowing that we're trying to tell a story and that we're going to try to take the audience on a voyage. But on this last expedition, which has yielded this film, Aliens of the Deep, we actually opened the doors to a number of science entities as well, and said, "Look, we're going out there with subs, with robotics, with lights, to all these interesting places. You know, who wants to play? Who wants to come with us? Can we offer you a platform on which to do research?" And we actually got our most resounding answers back from the astrobiology community. You know, at Ames Research, Johnson Space Center, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who were interested in comparing these deep ocean habitats with their kind of theories of what they might find when they find life on other planets.
Hmm. Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Janice is with us from Edgemont, South Dakota.
Yes, I would like to ask, in your adventures, I'm very curious what you think the environment is holding in the ocean. I noticed that you spoke about Jacques Cousteau, and I admire him greatly. And I'm very concerned about the environment there.
I'm very concerned as well, and I think we all should be very concerned. I've been focusing for the last few years on deep ocean habitats, and they tend to be somewhat disconnected from what's going on in the closer to the surface. But certainly, what's been happening in the last few years with overfishing and so on, there are some estimates that show that we've essentially eaten 90% of the large fish, the apex predators in the ocean. That's terrifying. I mean, it means that our children and grandchildren are going to live in a post-fish world, things that we've taken for granted. I mean, I think human beings are interesting because we kind of underestimate our own ability to impact our environment, and so we dismiss it because it's not something that we feel helpless to actually do anything about it. I think it's of great concern, and that's an area that I want to, in between my upcoming feature projects, I want to direct some of my filmmaking time to working on environmental themes as well. I think that's a very valid point that you've raised.
I would like to ask you one more question. The ocean liners that are crossing for these tourist things, are they still dumping in the ocean? And
yeah,
they are.
Yes, they're not restricted from doing it when they're outside of economic zones or territorial waters. So they do, yeah, absolutely, and they shouldn't.
Several years ago, there was a big issue about in New York where they had taken a lot of medical supplies from a hospital that was shipped back and forth from one country to another, and they had washed up on the beaches syringes and stuff. And really concerns me what we're doing. I mean, we just keep polluting everything. I don't understand why.
Well, historically, we've
treated the question off the air.
Okay, Janice, thank you.
But she's right. I mean, we have, you know, for all of human civilization, we've basically treated the ocean as infinite, and therefore it's okay to use it as a toilet. And we're finding out now that it doesn't work. And really the challenge of this century is going to be to get nations to work together to protect this common asset. You know, space, you know, astronauts would never dream in a million years of damaging their life support system, and the ocean is such a big part of our life support system here on Spaceship Earth, and yet we're trashing it left and right.
Edwards is our next caller. He's in Anchorage, Alaska. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. First of all, it's my first time talking on this show. I'm a long-time listener, but I'd like to ask you a question towards James Cameron, and what sort of impact do you believe the movie industry has had on exploration, whether it's undersea, in space, or on Earth itself?
I think if I had to be honest, I'd say that it's somewhat negative. Only because I think that science fiction, and I've certainly made my share of science fiction films, and I love science fiction films, but they've sort of leapfrogged past the sort of the real adventure of what it's going to be like, you know, for us to actually kind of, you know, work our way out into space planet by planet over the next, you know, hopefully the next, you know, few decades. And they've gone straight to, you know, warp factor 6 and all sorts of cool aliens that we can hang out with and you know, have all these dramas with, and really, you know, they've sort of raised the bar of expectations so high that the true challenge and the true adventure of space exploration now seems mundane by comparison. So we have to kind of, you know, reboot our whole way of looking at space exploration and set aside those unrealistic expectations and think about how great it would be, how absolutely stunning it would be if we could go to Mars and find a bacteria there. You know, not some cool alien that plays in a band, you know, but a bacteria that came from a different source than we did. That would be amazing. But we have to kind of, you know, kind of retool our whole perspective in order to appreciate that.
If I could stretch the definition of movies from what I think Edwards was talking about just a bit, I remember as a kid going to see The Undersea World of Jacques Cousteau. And
that's true.
You know, that's true. Kind of movies change things.
Certainly television and documentaries, the type, you know, Jacques Cousteau did more to further ocean exploration than probably any single individual. And, I mean, he certainly opened my eyes back in the 60s. I think he opened the entire world's eyes to the beauty and the exotic other world that existed right here on Earth. Hmm. And I made a decision very early on when I was 16 years old that it would be very unlikely that I'd ever be on a real space mission, but I could go to another planet right here, the underwater portion of planet Earth. So I became a scuba diver at a very, you know, very young age as a result of that, direct result of Jacques Cousteau. And that was television. That was, and certainly, you know, the types of films that we're making right now, hopefully, you know, what I'm trying to do here is get people excited about the adventure of science, the adventure of exploration that's still before us. We're not living in a post-exploration age.
Edwards, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, yeah, Edwards.
Thank you.
Here's an email we got from Jamie Eiten in Columbus, Ohio. I was very excited to hear the topic of your show today, but not more excited than my 6-year-old daughter, who's become fascinated by the deep sea, particularly hydrothermal vents. So on behalf of my 6-year-old, I was wondering if you might deviate from the profound topic of exploration and address the crazy Dumbo creature, the deep sea octopus. Did you happen upon this creature in your explorations, and what do we know about it?
Oh, boy, she is going to be so happy if she gets to go see this film, especially if she can see it in one of the 3D venues. We did come across a very large specimen of the Dumbo octopus, which is an absolutely gorgeous creature, certainly the most amazing and transporting creature that I've ever seen underwater. And we were able to image it really beautifully for about 20 minutes, and we have some great shots of it in the film.
How big is it?
Maybe a little less than a meter long. But it's absolutely gorgeous, and it has these kind of wings, has wings on its head, and it has these bright, intelligent eyes, and it just kind of hung out with us, and we got some amazing, amazing footage of it.
Are there pictures? There's a book that accompanies the movie Aliens of the Deep, and I assume
right.
There are pictures in that as well. So
yes.
Okay, great. That sounds fabulous. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Andrew. Andrew's calling from Wichita, Kansas.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
Hi. Good, thank you. Love the show, love the movies, James.
Thanks.
I'm a graduate student here at a university in Wichita, Kansas, earth science, and I've been doing an expose on underwater volcanoes.
Great.
And so my two questions for you basically are about the technology you use in your movies, because I've been finding out in my educational career that our resources for underwater exploration are really kind of limited.
They're very limited.
You know, compared to what you see in the movies. So my questions are, A, where do you get your ideas for the technologies in the movies? And also, do you see any kind of, now it might seem far-fetched, but any of the technologies you use in the movies, you see those being like a precursor or actually becoming real?
Oh, yeah. We're definitely inhabiting this strange boundary zone between sort of reality and science fiction with these documentary films that we're doing, because we're building our own technology. Often it's things that we just wish existed, and the only way to make them exist is just build them ourselves, like these little fiber optic spooling mini ROVs that we used to look inside the Titanic. That didn't exist before. So we created it. So we're kind of living on this fringe of technological possibility. Now, if things exist, such as the manned submersible systems that we use, like the Mir submersibles, which are operated by the Russian Academy of Sciences, we'll charter them, we'll use them, and we'll work with them. If something doesn't exist, we'll just push forward and create it. But like you said, the technology is limited, and the amount of it that's available is very limited. There are four submersibles in the world right now that can go to 20,000 feet, and that's like trying to explore an area the size of all the continents of the world put together with four jeeps. It just we could be at it for 10,000 years with the technology we have available right now.
Right. Yeah. That was one of my main concerns going into this research project, was just the simple fact of the documented volcanoes we already know of.
Mm-hmm.
That people had the resources to explore.
Right.
But the technology, I think, is definitely very possible. It's just, we're not, I just really appreciate your stance on the importance of the technology and the exploration.
Yeah, we need
to.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're on a roll.
It just seems that as much as we want to push forward for this exploration and discovery, from a scientist's point of view, it just seems that they're still holding us back in the aspect of old ways or old technology.
Yeah, and the cost of the technology doesn't really come down. Doesn't really follow Moore's law, because you're dealing with a very harsh environment with, as right, thousands of pounds per square inch of pressure. It's not very friendly to electronics. And there aren't a lot of sort of breathtaking new ways to do things. So really, we just need more funding for this type of research. We've got 97% of the ocean that hasn't been imaged yet, hasn't been properly explored. And they're finding all sorts of new volcanoes, as I'm sure the Lao Basin and so on is really rich new terrain that scientists are really, really interested in. And understanding, how the Earth works, how crust is made, what's going on all around the planet, two-thirds of it is happening at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Andrew, thanks for the call.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Andrew. Keep at it.
Thank you.
We're speaking with James Cameron about the editing position that he took as a guest in Wired magazine, and also about his new project, Aliens of the Deep, a picture that's going to be in 3D and IMAX out in January. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Gary is with us from Pensacola, Florida.
Hello.
Hi, Gary.
How you doing? Hi, James. I'm Gary Montemure.
Hi, Gary.
I'm a pilot on a research submarine out in the Cayman Islands, and I have been since the early 90s. I had the privilege of working with the BBC
right,
on the Blue Planet, and took Penny
yep,
Allen down there, and we found
yep,
what was
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
What
that's
was
great.
Considered to be the largest flesh-eating shark ever seen. It was a 25-foot six-gill.
Yeah, I saw the piece. You're diving in the Perry PC 1203. Is that right?
1203 and 1205. That's
yep,
right.
Yep.
Well, 2 years later, I got a call from a professor at St. Andrews University in Scotland saying that his statistical research has shown that there's only about 46 creatures that have yet to been discovered that are over 6 feet long, and
yep,
Monsters of the Deep is his next book, and that's
yep,
why our sighting was so important to him. What do you think about that statistic?
Well, I hope he's wrong. I hope there's more than that. They're always coming up with new ones. They've just recently found this, what they're calling, I think, the colossal squid or something like that, down in the Southern Ocean, which is supposed to be, you know, even bigger and meaner than the Architeuthis, the giant squid. So I think they're always coming up with evidence of new, you know, large predators at that depth. Certainly, and by the way, congratulations, because that imaging that was done of your six gill is really, really pretty definitive right now. It's probably the best footage out there. It was an amazing sighting. Hmm.
Gary, thanks for the call and continued good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we get one more call in. William. William's calling from Louisville in Kentucky.
Hi, great show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have three real quick things. First for Neil, earlier you said, you know, to the radio audience, where would we explore? I would explore the microverse, which I think has a vast untapped potential.
Okay.
And Mr. Cameron, I want to take this opportunity to tell you I think you're a genius.
Well,
and I think you're...
Call in any time.
Okay. gushing fanboy. But seriously, I think it's important work that you're doing with these new projects. And I wanted to ask you if you... if this is a new career path for you, if you're planning on doing any more Hollywood movies later down the road, or are undecided yet?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Yeah, it's been a kind of a tug of war for me, because I love you know, putting on a great show in the kind of Hollywood tradition, but it's hard to establish credibility in the area of exploration and underwater imaging and technology, and that's taken a few years. And now I feel I'm at a point where I can bifurcate my time between feature production and documentary filmmaking, and we're enough on the map as a serious documentary outfit and as an expedition based filmmaking outfit that I can afford to take time away from it now to make a feature. I can take a year and a half away from the expeditions, go make a feature, and then come back, do another expedition, that sort of thing.
We only have a little bit of time left. Could you give us any idea of what your next feature is?
Yeah, actually, we're in pre-production right now on a project called Battle Angel, which is something I've been working on for several years, and we're finishing up the shooting draft right now. We've been designing it. It's a big science fiction film, and a couple of things that'll be interesting about this project. The main character, even though it's a live action film, the main character will be done with CG animation. And the second thing that's interesting is we're going to be shooting it in 3D. using the stereo imaging system that we've been developing for the documentaries.
Hmm. William, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Oh, sure.
Thanks, William.
I had one more.
I'm afraid we don't have time, William.
All right, thanks.
We have to let it go, and we have to let James Cameron go, too.
All right, thanks,
thank
Neil.
You very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
James Cameron, the Oscar-winning filmmaker of Titanic, also the director and writer of the Terminator pictures, guest editor of Wired Magazine's latest issue on exploration, his IMAX film Aliens of the Deep will be in IMAX theaters in January, and he joined us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a break from the Titanic of the silver screen to the man who found the actual wreck in the North Atlantic, and he's been back, Robert Ballard joins us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.